place. He flipped the switch in his brain. Zerid the father fled before Z-Man, the soldier and smuggler. The man at the park had been all wrong, from his hair to his clothes to the coldness in his eyes. He could have been nobody, or he could have been somebody. Zerid decided that he would linger in the apartment building for a while, out of sight, just to be sure Nat and Arrow were safe. He took station on their floor and settled in. He hadn't done sentry duty since he was a new recruit. Felt good, though. Vrath sat in the aircar taxi on the street outside the decrepit apartment building. The smell of rotten fish and dirty lake filled the air. He watched for a long time, monitoring Zerid's movements with the tracker. Zerid had stopped moving. Perhaps he shared an apartment there with Nat and Era. He gave it a while longer, then decided to take a look. He paid the droid driver, hopped out of the aircar, dodged the few ramshackle speeders and the public speeder bus that flew low through the street, and headed across to the apartment building. Zerid's eyes adjusted to the dim lights that flickered intermittently in the hallway. The door to Nat and Era's flat was about halfway down the corridor. There was no other way in or out of the apartment. All he needed to do was take a bore sighting down the hall. The far end of the hallway ended in a cracked glass window. The near side ended in the lift and a door to the stairs. Other than scaling the building from the outside, the lift and the stairs were the only way onto the fourth floor. He could cover both. He thought about just lingering in the hallway and putting the muzzle of his blaster into the belly of anyone who looked at him sideways, but that wouldn't do. He did not want to draw too much attention to himself, and he did not want to cause a scene unnecessarily. He finally decided to take station on the emergency stairwell to the side of the lift. He propped the door open so he could see the lift, the hall, and the stairs. A good field of fire, he decided. He took the E-9 blaster pistol, small, compact, but with decent power, held it in his front jacket pocket, and waited. Minutes passed, turned to half an hour, to an hour, and he began to think his paranoia had ill-served him. The building did not see a lot of foot traffic. A near obsolete utility droid came up the creaky lift and vacuumed the floor, ignoring Zerid altogether. When it completed its sweep, it retired to a utility closet next to the lift. Zerid sat alone with only uncomfortable thoughts for company in a stairwell that smelled of urine and vomit. He had let his daughter down. To try and give her a better life, he had turned himself into the kind of man he once would have regarded with contempt. And what did she have to show for it? A decrepit apartment and an absentee father who could die on his next run. And a hover chair, he reminded himself. But still, he had to get out of the life. But there was no walking away until he cleared his debt with the exchange. So he'd make a last run to Coruscant. The door to the stairwell on the ground floor opened with an angry squeal. At almost the same moment, he heard the rumble of the lift coming up the shaft. Alert and tense, he went to the railing at the edge of the stairwell and peered down. Light from the fluorescent fixture attached to the ceiling two floors above him did little to illuminate the stairwell. Shadows coated the lower floors, but Zerid thought he saw a form there, humanoid, and watched it start up the stairs. Meanwhile, the chime of the lift announced its arrival on the fourth floor. Cupping his blaster in his hand, Zerid flattened himself against the wall near the doorway of the stairwell. The footsteps coming from below continued their slow ascent. They stopped from time to time, as if the person was unsure of his or her destination, or was stopping to listen. The lift doors opened, and Zerid heard the soft susurrus of quiet movement. The lift doors closed. The footsteps on the steps started again. Stopped. Zerid waited a three count and poked his head around the doorway to give him a view of the hallway. A cloaked figure stole down the corridor, about the size of the man he'd met in the park. He was checking the doors for apartment numbers. Zerid could not see the figure's hands. He shot a look back at the stairwell, heard nothing, and stole out into the hallway. The figure stopped before Nat's apartment and consulted a palm-sized port comp as if confirming an address. Zirid had seen all he needed to see. He brandished the E9.
"You, move away from that door!"
The figure turned toward him, reached for something at waist level. Zirid did not hesitate. He pulled the trigger, and the muffled whump of the E9 sounded like a polite cough. In near perfect time with Zirid pulling the trigger, the motion so fast that it was blurry, the figure whipped free a silver cylinder that grew a glowing green line and deflected the E9's bolt into the floor. Before Zirid squeezed off another shot, the figure cocked its head and deactivated the lightsaber. Zirid? A woman? Zirid did not lower his weapon or his temperature. He could not make sense of the lightsaber. A Jedi?
"Who are you?"
he asked. The figure threw back her hood to reveal long, sandy hair and the warm green eyes that Zirid had never forgotten. The heat and tension went out of him in a rush.
"Aaron?
Aaron Lanier?
What are you doing here?"
"Looking for you," she said.
She motioned at the door to Nat's apartment.
"I thought I would try your sister-in-law's."
"Are you alone? Did someone follow you?"
She looked taken aback by the rapid-fire questions.
Yes. No.
"How did you find me?"
"Luck. I remembered your sister-in-law's name. I hope she could help me find you."
"Stay there,"
he said, and hurried back down the hall to the stairwell. He looked down and saw nothing and no one. Whoever it had been on the stairs was gone. He told himself that it was probably just a resident coming home. He turned to find himself staring into Aaron's concerned face. She looked much as she had when she'd held him while he cried over Val's death.
"What is wrong?"
she asked. No doubt she could feel his apprehension.
"Probably nothing. I'm overreacting, I think."
She smiled her smile, but he saw something new in her eyes. A hardness. He did not need to be a Force user to know that something was different.
"What happened to you?"
he asked.
"I just saw you on the net. I thought you were on Alderaan."
A veil fell over her eyes and closed her off. He'd never seen it before. Not from her. Though he imagined his own expression looked much the same when he was working.
"I was. That's part of what I want to talk about. I need your help. Can we go somewhere and talk?"
"This really is not a good time, Aaron."
"It's important."
He had a flash of fear, thinking the Jedi had caught wind of the Engspice delivery, had learned that he was to deliver it, and were intent on stopping him. But she said nothing about Engspice.
"It's a personal issue, Z-Man. Not something for the Order."
He breathed easier. Even smiled at how silly his name sounded when she said it. Maybe it sounded that silly all the time. He shot a glance back down the hall at Nat's apartment. Closed and secure, like all the other doors in the hall. A blaster shot and an activated lightsaber had not even merited an open door. He had to get them both out of there. There was no place for a child. Aaron touched his arm.
"Are you all right?"
He let out a long breath and tried to shed some stress. He was overreacting. Since arriving on planet, he had taken all of the precautions he usually took. No one he didn't want to know knew of his relationship to Era or Nat, much less where they lived. Aaron had stumbled on him only because they were friends from way back, and she knew Nat's name. The man in the park had probably been nobody, just a random passerby.
I'm all right. I do know a place we can talk, for old time's sake. But I may have to cut it short. I'm expecting a call."
Zirid could get the ping from Orin at any time. They walked out to the street and waited with a small crowd for a public speeder bus to arrive. They boarded, and it pulled away. Zirid watched Nat and Era's building vanish below them. He tried to fill the pit in his stomach by telling himself that they would be fine. breath lingered outside the stairwell entrance to Zirid's apartment. His tracker had shown him Zirid's location before he'd gotten halfway up the stairs. An ambush, or just extreme cautiousness? Leaning against the crumbling brick wall, he eyed the tracker. It showed Zirid moving away on the speeder bus. Vrath had seen the woman who had accompanied him. It wasn't Nat. He activated his comlink and raised the rest of his team, all of whom were stationed at or near the Intellake spaceport.
He's mobile, on a speeder bus, heading in your direction. I'm en route.
Zirid and Aaron rode the Airbus in silence to a stop near the hulking, rusty geometry of the spaceport. From there, they walked the busy street to a casino Zirid knew, the Spiral Galaxy, where Nat worked. An overpowering sea of smoke, shouts, flashing lights, and music greeted them. No one would overhear them there. Zirid led Aaron to the bar area, found a corner table that allowed him a view of the rest of the room, and sat. He waved off the server before the young man ever reached their table. Aaron glanced around the casino, tiny furrows lining her brow. She looked to have aged 10 years since he'd last seen her. He imagined he looked much the same to her, if not worse. He was surprised she had recognized him. But then maybe she hadn't recognized him by sight so much as by feel. He leaned back in the chair and spoke loud enough to be heard over the ambient sound.
You said you needed my help.
She nodded, leaned forward to put her elbows on the table. She looked past him as she spoke, and he had the impression she was reciting something she had rehearsed.
I need to get to Coruscant as soon as possible.
He chuckled.
That makes two of us.
His response threw her off.
How do you mean?
Never mind. Coruscant isn't exactly Jedi-friendly at the moment.
No. And this isn't sanctioned by the Order.
Her response threw him off. He'd never known Aaron to buck orders.
Really?
Really.
You'll want to wait until the negotiations on Alderaan are completed, right? See how things shake out in a week?
I can't wait.
No? Why?
She sat back in her chair as if to open some distance between them. Room for a lie, maybe.
I need to get something from the temple.
What?
Something personal.
He leaned forward, closing the gap between them, reducing the room for falsehoods.
Aaron, we haven't seen each other in years. You show up out of a nebula and tell me you want my help to get to a world just conquered by the Empire, and that getting you there isn't sanctioned by the Jedi Order.
He let her stew in that for a moment before continuing.
Maybe I want to help you. Maybe I can.
She looked up at that, hope in her eyes.
You were there for me when I went through a tough time. But I need to understand what's really happening here.
She smiled and shook her head.
I missed you and didn't know it.
He felt his cheeks warm and tried to hide his discomfiture. Of course, he could hide nothing from her. She would feel the warmth her words put in him. She slid her chair forward and crossed her hands on the table. He was very conscious of how close her hands were to his. It seemed he had missed her, too.
The attack killed someone I cared about.
The sinking feeling he felt surprised him.
A husband?
Could Jedi even marry? He didn't know. She shook her head.
My master, Ben Zallo.
I'm sorry.
He touched her hand in sympathy, and it put such a charge through him that he pulled away. Surprisingly, he did not see pain in her expression, but anger.
The temple will have vids of the attack. I need to see how he died.
It could have been bombs, Aaron. Anything.
She shook her head before he finished his sentence.
No. It was a Sith.
You know this?
I know it. And I want to see that Sith. Know his name.
Insight dawned.
You want to kill him.
She did not gainsay it. He blew out a whistle.
Blast, Aaron. I thought you'd come here to arrest me.
Arrest you? Why?
Never mind, he said. No wonder the order didn't sanction your going to Coruscant. What would this do to the peace negotiations? You're talking about assassinating someone.
The coldness in her eyes was new to him.
I'm talking about avenging my master. They murdered him, Zirid. I will not let it stand. Do you think I don't know exactly what I'm doing? What it will cost?
No, I don't think you know.
You're wrong. I want help from you, Zirid, not a lecture. Now I need to get to Coruscant. Will you help?
He'd been working alone since he'd mustered out. Preferred it that way. But working with Aaron had always felt right. If he was going to fly with anyone, it would be her. His comm buzzed. He checked it. Saw an encrypted message from Orin. Decrypted it. Goods are aboard, Fat Man. Leave immediately. Cargo is hot. He looked across the table at Aaron.
Your timing is good.
Her eyes formed a question.
I'm flying to Coruscant too. Right now.
What?
She looked dumbfounded. He pushed back his chair and stood.
Coming?
She stayed in her chair.
You're flying to Coruscant? Now?
Right now.
She stood.
Then yes, I'm coming.
Whatever you flew here, you need to leave it. We're taking only my ship.
Aaron tapped on her comlink and spoke over the sound of the casino.
T-6, put the Raven in lockdown. I am going off planet. Monitor our usual subspace channel, and I will contact you when I can.
The droid's answering beeps were lost to the cacophony. They started picking their way through the crowd. Aaron took him by the bicep and pulled his ear to her mouth.
It can't be coincidence, you know. Consider the timing. The Force brought us here at this moment so that we can help each other. You see that, don't you?
At a table near them, bells rang, and a Zabrak raised his arms high, shouting with joy.
Jackpot!
The Zabrak said.
Jackpot!
Zirid decided that he had to tell her. He shouted over the noise.
If the Force brought us together, then the Force has an odd sense of humor.
Her eyes narrowed in a question.
What are you talking about?
He dived in.
Listen, what I'm doing makes what you're doing look like charity work.
Her expression fell, and her body leaned backward slightly.
What do you mean?
I'm going to give you another chance to ask that question before I answer it. Before you do, realize that I would make this run whether you came or not, Aaron. I'm not proud of it, but I have to do it. Now, do you want to know?
Yes,
she said and blinked.
But later. Right now, and do not look around. There are people watching us.
An effort of will kept his eyes on her. Orin had told him the cargo was hot, but he didn't realize it was that hot. He feigned a smile.
Where? How many?
Two that I can see. A human male at the bar, brown jacket, long black hair. To my right, a human male in a long black coat and gloves.
You sure?
He nodded as if he was agreeing with something she said.
Mostly.
How do we play it?
He asked her. Funny how they so easily fell back into old rules. She giving the orders and he obeying them.
We play dumb and make for the spaceport. We'll evaluate as we go. Then?
Then?
Her hand went under her cloak to the hilt of her lightsaber.
Then we improvise.
He took mental stock of all the weapons he bore and their location on his person.
Good enough,
he said, and they headed for the exit.
Chapter 7.
The shuttle took Alina and Malgus skyward to Malgus's cruiser, Valor. Malgus stared out one of the viewports as they broke through the atmosphere. He felt Alina's eyes on him, but did not turn to her. His thoughts were on the Force, on the Empire, and how the two seemed to be diverging before his eyes. The question for him was singular. What would he do about it? The pilot's voice carried over the speaker.
Darth Malgus, Darth Angrel wishes to speak to you.
Malgus cocked his head in a question. He looked to Alina, but she looked away, out of viewport at the receding surface of Coruscant.
Put him through.
The small vidscreen in the shuttle's passenger compartment lit up and projected a holographic image of Darth Angrel. He sat at the same desk in the Chancellor's office from which he had previously lectured Malgus. Malgus wondered if a Drass remained there still.
My lord,
Malgus said, though the words felt false.
Darth Malgus, I see you have recovered your companion. I am pleased for you.
I am returning her to Valor, and then I will return to the surface to assist.
Angrel held up a hand and shook his head.
There is no need for that, old friend. Your presence on Coruscant is no longer necessary. Instead, I need you to command the blockade and ensure the safety of the hyperspace lanes.
My lord, any naval officer could.
But I am ordering you to do this, Darth Malgus.
Malgus stared at the image of Darth Angrel for a long while before he trusted himself to answer.
Very well, Darth Angrel.
He cut off the connection, and the image sank back into the screen. A headache rooted in the base of his skull. He could feel the veins in his head pulsing, each beat amplifying his disillusionment, his growing rage. He did not need to be skilled in political maneuvering to understand that Angrel ordering him into an unimportant role was a way of sending the clear message that he was out of favor. Angrel had used him just long enough to ensure the success of the sacking of Coruscant. And now he was being edged aside in favor of Lord Adras. In the span of a day, he had gone from the conqueror of Coruscant to a second-tier Darth. He glanced over at Alina once more, wondering how much of it she understood. She did not look at him, just continued to look out the viewport. Pedestrians thronged the misty street outside the casino. The smell of the lake was strong. Dead fish, other organic decay. Zirid swept the crowd with his eyes, seeking anyone else that struck him as suspicious. He saw 20 men in the crowded street who might have been eyeing him.
I can't make anyone in this crowd, he said.
Two drunk hooks staggered by, shouting a song in their native tongue. A young Bothan revved his swoop engine and blasted into the air. Ubiquitous air car taxis lined the street. Private air cars and a public speeder bus flew above them.
Keep moving, Aaron said. No urgency, though.
The spaceport occupied several blocks beginning across the street from them. Digital billboards affixed to its side played advertisements for everything from vacation homes to energy bars to debt relief counseling. Zirid sympathized with that last. Moving with forced casualness, they cut across the street, eliciting the honk of a signal horn and a raised fist, and headed for the nearest entrance to the spaceport.
Don't look back, Aaron said. They're there.
How do you know?
I know.
The doors to the spaceport opened. Baggage trams pulled by droids rolled through the doors, followed by a dozen or so recent arrivals of several different sentient species. The doors closing behind them cut short the pitches of the taxi drivers. Vrath sat on a bench inside the spaceport, pressed between a female Rodian on his left and a male Ithorian on his right. The Ithorian smelled like leather and hummed a tune through his two mouths. Vrath endured and watched Zirid and the woman enter the spaceport. Zirid glanced around, suspicion in his eyes. but Wrath had spent years perfecting his own inconspicuousness, a skill invaluable to a sniper, and Zirid's eyes moved over and past him. He whispered commands, the sound inaudible above the commotion of the spaceport. The implant in his jaw amplified the words and sent them to the earpieces of his team.
He is wary. Keep your distance.
Wrath did not want Zirid to sense danger and bolt before Wrath located the cargo. His team had stolen aboard Zirid's ship hours earlier and searched it. They found nothing, and other than a routine visit from one of the port's maintenance inspection droids, no one had been aboard since. Two of his team were stationed near the ship, keeping an eye on it. Wrath watched Zirid and the woman with his peripheral vision, and using his audio implant, listened to them as best he could over the sounds of the port. Zirid studied the faces of those around him, looking for anyone else who might be watching them. Faces blurred into one another. He felt as if their pursuers were breathing right down his neck. Unable to stop himself, he turned and shot a glance backward. Through the sea of faces, he glimpsed the two men Aaron had described in the casino. Both saw him looking at them. He looked away, cursing himself.
"They know we know,"
he said. Aaron was staring at a wall-mounted vidscreen that showed a news piece about the negotiations on Alderaan. "A breakthrough in negotiations?" read the caption. A human man, his dark hair combed back over a wrinkled face, was speaking. Zirid did not recognize him. The tag below his image named him Lord Barriss.
"Did you hear what I said, Aaron?"
She pulled her eyes away from the screen with difficulty.
"I heard you. What do you think they want?"
Zirid had made a lot of enemies since signing on with the exchange, but he figured those pursuing them wanted the Engspice.
"They want the cargo we're taking to Coruscant," he said.
They hopped on an autowalk that sped them across the port. Through the transparisteel windows along one wall, they could see freighters and other small starships sitting on the port's landing pads. Crane droids loaded and unloaded cargo. He used the reflection in the transparisteel to determine if the men were still behind them. They were, but he still could not tell if there were more or just the two.
"They just got on the autowalk behind us,"
Zirid said as the men followed them onto the belt.
"Tell me what it is, Zirid. The cargo."
He did not hesitate, though he did not look at her when he answered. Instead, he stared at his own reflection in the transparisteel.
"Engspice."
She said nothing for a time, and he disliked the import of the silence.
"How did you get into running Engspice?"
she asked finally. He disliked even more the accusation he heard in her tone and turned to face her.
"How did you fall out with the Order and go off looking to murder? It's a long story, yes? Well, so is this."
She stared into his face, those open green eyes. He saw more pain in them than he'd ever seen before.
"You're right. I'm sorry, Zirid. I didn't mean..."
"I'm not proud of it, Aaron."
"I know."
She would know. She would sense his guilt, his ambivalence.
"We do what we do,"
she said.
"We do what we must."
"Right,"
she said.
"What we must."
They switched walks, took an auto stair up a floor. He continued to watch the two men behind them. They made no move to close the distance between them.
"What are they waiting for?"
Aaron asked. Zirid had wondered the same thing, but realization soon dawned.
"They don't know whether I know where the spice is."
Ahead, he saw the landing pad where Fat Man as Red Dwarf was docked. A long cargo tram rolled past. A platoon of maintenance droids trudged near it. A man and a woman before it waved to each other, smiled, embraced, and moved on. Another two men near it drew his attention. One sat on a chair near the door that led out to the landing pad. A port comp sat open on his lap, but he paid it no heed. The second faced the transparisteel window, ostensibly looking out on the landing pad. Zirid imagined him watching them approach in its reflection.
"Do you know where it is?"
Aaron asked.
"It's on my ship,"
he said.
"The exchange uses jacked maintenance droids to sneak illicit cargo onto their mules."
Vrath walked beside a Twi'lek woman carrying a small travel bag. He stayed close to her and let his body language suggest that they were together. When he heard Zirid's words via his audio implant, he cursed himself for missing the obvious. The maintenance droid had been hijacked with stealth programming to load the Yang Spice. Vrath did not have the firepower on hand to destroy Zirid's ship, so he'd have to do things the hard way.
"The cargo is on the target's ship, and the target is not to get aboard," he said,
his words loud enough that the Twi'lek looked at him askance and moved away.
"Keen,"
he said to the driver of the speeder he had stationed outside.
"Be ready with an evac off the target's landing pad."
Vrath drew his blaster and pushed through the crowd.
"Everybody down!"
The man facing the transparisteel window turned, while the man on the bench sat aside his port comp and stood.
"Here they come," Zirid said.
Eren let her hand fall to the hilt of her lightsaber.
"I see them."
Zirid glanced back and saw the two men who had trailed them out of the casino moving at a jog, then a run through the crowd. Both reached behind their backs for weapons. A third man, Zirid had not noticed before, but who looked vaguely familiar to him, shouted for everyone to get down and fired a blaster shot into the high ceiling. Panic gripped the crowd. Screams erupted from all around, and people dived to the ground or ducked behind benches and chairs. The dozens of droids in the vicinity stopped in their work and glanced about in confusion, their programming leaving them slow to respond to the unexpected. The two men between Eren and Zirid and the ship had blasters in hand, firing as they approached. Eren's lightsaber hummed to life, spun a rapid arc before them, and deflected the shots into the ceiling and floor. More screams, the acrid stink of discharged blasters. Zirid pulled his blaster from under his armpit and put two shots into one of the two men. The impact blew the man from his feet and left a charred shirt and two black holes in his chest. Zirid grabbed Eren and pulled her down behind the box-shaped body of a stationary maintenance droid, while the surviving man in front of them returned fire, and the three men closing from behind opened up. A shot grazed the sole of Zirid's boot and left it smoking and black. The droid they'd sheltered behind vibrated under the impact of multiple shots.
"Do not move, droid," Zirid said.
But it could not have moved had it wished to. Smoke rose from the holes in its body, and sparks shot out.
"We have to get to my ship," Zirid said.
"The authorities will be coming."
Zirid shook his head.
"Too many questions, Eren. I've got Eng Spice aboard. They'll seize the ship and arrest us both. We have to go. Now!"
The men from behind were closing, using benches, chairs, and the bodies of passers-by and droids for cover as they closed the distance. The screams and shouts of the civvies made it hard to think.
"I just want the cargo!"
One of the men, the leader apparently, shouted above the tumult. For answer, Zirid popped up from behind the droid and fired three quick shots. He hit no one, but he drove all three of the men behind them to the ground. He whirled on the man before them just in time to see the red muzzle flare of the blaster shot that slammed into his chest and sent him sliding 3 meters along the floor. The impact blew the breath from his lungs and left him gasping. Black smoke spiraled up from the hole ablated in his armored vest. He'd been hit before and kept his wits, despite the pain and difficulty breathing.
"I'm hit,"
he said.
He rolled over onto his stomach and fired
as rapidly as he could pull the trigger at the three men behind him. They responded in kind. Blaster bolts put holes in the floor around him. Chunks of floor tile flew into the air. He could barely hear anything over the sound of blaster fire and the screams of the civvies. A shot from the attack's leader, the man who looked so familiar, caught Zirid's shoulder. Once more, his armor spared him serious injury, but the impact sent a jolt of pain down the length of his arm, left his hand numb, and sent his blaster skittering over the floor. It stopped directly before a Zeltron female who lay flat on the floor. He met her wide-eyed gaze and saw the mindless fear. She made no move toward the blaster. He rolled for cover away from the woman as more and more shots from the three men caged him in. Near him, a civilian moaned, presumably hit in the crossfire. A woman shrieked. He had to get clear. But before he could stand, Aaron was over him, her blade a blur of motion that formed a cocoon of green light around him, deflecting blaster shots in all directions. She grabbed him under his armpit and helped him to his feet while still deflecting shots. Up, she said. Up! He still had not caught his breath enough to reply, but with her assistance he got to his feet. His right arm hung from his shoulder like a slab of meat. Reaching behind to the small of his back, he pulled the E9 he kept there and took it in his left hand.
The ship,
he said, still struggling for air. Aaron gestured at a cargo tram near the three men shooting at them from behind. The six cars of the tram rushed toward the men, propelled by Aaron's power. They scrambled aside, and Aaron and Zirid dashed for Fat Man. The single man standing between them and the ship fired once, twice, and Aaron deflected both shots. Zirid leveled the E9 and fired. The shot hit the man in the brow, and he fell backward, eyes wide open, blood pooling. Dead. As they pelted to the ship, more blaster shots rang out, and Aaron's blade hummed. The energy of the weapon caused Zirid's hair to stand on end. They bounded over the dead man and through the transferesteel doors to the landing pad. The door slid shut behind them, shutting off the screens of the civvies. Zirid was grateful for it. Blaster shots thudded into the doors. The sound of speeder swoops and other nearby ships put a thrum in the air. Shots rang out from above and to the right. A bolt clipped Aaron in the calf and knocked her legs out from under her. An unmarked open-top speeder flew in from the right, the pilot, a human male, firing over the side. Zirid crouched, one hand on Aaron, as he fired three shots with the E9, trying to target one of the grav thrusters on the speeder, but hitting only the surrounding fuselage. The shots did no damage, so he targeted the cockpit. Trying to avoid Zirid's fire, the pilot overcompensated and the speeder turned hard right. While the pilot scrambled to regain control, Zirid grabbed Aaron with his good arm and pulled her to her feet.
I'm all right, she said. Go! Go!
Sirens screamed in the distance, presaging the arrival of the port authorities. Supporting each other arm in arm, they limped to the entry door and Zirid punched in the code. Behind them, the doors to the landing pad slid open. Shots rang off the hull of Fat Man. Zirid fired a few blind bolts behind him. Aaron deflected another two shots into the bulkhead. The ship's door slid open, too carking slow. Zirid grabbed Aaron and climbed in before the door was all the way open. He hit the button to close it, and the door stopped and reversed itself.
I've got to get us out of here. You all right?
I'm fine, she said.
The wound on her calf was ugly, but it looked like a graze. The pink, raw meat of her flesh was bordered by black lines of charred skin. He pelted through Fat Man's corridors until he reached the cockpit, slammed himself into the pilot seat, and fired up the engines. His numb arm made it difficult, but he managed. He looked out of the cockpit for the speeder, saw it above him. He'd ram it if it didn't get out of the way. The thrusters engaged, and Fat Man rose off the pad. The speeder wheeled to the side. The pilot fired wildly at the cockpit, but Fat Man's transparisteel canopy turned the shots without so much as a mark. Zirid considered blowing the speeder from the air with Fat Man's plasma cannons, but the falling debris might hurt an innocent.
Consider yourself fortunate, fella.
When he had 10 meters of altitude, he engaged the ion engines, and Fat Man blazed skyward. He monitored the scanners to ensure no one was following them. When he saw nothing, he let himself uncoil. He tested his arm, found it unbroken, just badly bruised. The feeling was already beginning to return to his hand. Once the ship broached the atmosphere, he gave her to the autopilot and hurried back to the hold to check on Aaron. Wrath holstered his still warm weapon while he watched Zirid's ship lift into Volta's night sky. The ship's ion engines flared blue, and the freighter sped into the darkness and mingled with the rest of the night traffic. He cursed as he surveyed the ruins of their ambush. Two of his men dead, one wounded, the authorities en route, and he'd neither seized nor destroyed the Engspice. The Huts would be unhappy. Hundreds of faces stared out at them through the transparent steel windows of the spaceport. Behind the faces, he saw security droids and blue-uniformed security officers speeding along the autowalks. Some of the gawkers turned to the officers, pointed fingers outside at Brath and his men. He could hear sirens in the distance.
"Time to get clear, boss," said Darren.
Brath nodded. He regretted leaving his dead behind, but their identities would tell the authorities nothing. They'd all been surgically altered several times over. Their current identities would not be traceable to the huts. Keen set the speeder down on the landing pad. Brath, Darren, and Lom hopped in.
"Move,"
Brath said. Keen brought the speeder up and punched the acceleration. The wind whipped over them. Keen kept the speeder low and mixed with the traffic in the heart of Yinta Lake. Brath kept an eye behind them for pursuit, but saw none.
"We are clear,"
he said. Keen slowed the speeder and changed course, heading for their safe house. Lom started a stream of expletives that lasted 3 minutes. When he finished, Darren said,
"The hut said nothing about Jedi involvement."
"No, they didn't,"
Brath agreed, though he doubted his contact with the huts had known.
"What are the Jedi doing with a spice runner?"
Darren asked. Brath shook his head, pondering.
Jedi involvement made no sense. Unless...
"Maybe the Jedi want to put their agent on Coruscant, and they're using a spice runner to get her there."
Darren harumphed, seemingly unimpressed with the explanation.
"So how do they get through the Imperial blockade and get to Coruscant? He can't just fly up to an Imperial cruiser."
"No,"
Brath said, still thinking.
"He can't. But he's got to have something in mind. The spice needs to get there, and get there fast."
"Right."
Brath made up his mind.
"Keen, get me a razor."
"Why? What are you gonna do?"
Darren asked.
"I'm gonna fly right up to an Imperial cruiser."
"Huh?"
Brath did not waste time with further explanation. The authorities would be searching for them once they analyzed video of the battle in the spaceport. Probably the Exchange already had the video, too. They'd be hunting Brath and his team also.
"Get to your ships and get off planet,"
Brath said. His team had landed in the bush outside Yinta Lake and had not registered with planetary control.
"We rendezvous in 3 standard days at the usual place on Ord Mantell."
He would get one more chance at stopping the Anslice. Zerid found Aaron limping through the corridors toward the cockpit.
"We're away,"
he said.
"Safely, it seems. I got nothing but normal traffic on the scanners."
"Good. Now what?"
"Now we go to Coruscant,"
she said.
"How will we get through the Imperial blockade?"
"Ah. Well, that's complicated. Why don't you go take care of that leg?"
"Why don't you take care of that arm?"
"I need to eyeball the cargo. You don't need to come."
"I think I won't."
He nodded.
"Medbay is forward and starboard."
She smiled.
"Cold toe for your cuts."
"Cold toe for your cuts,"
he echoed. A soldier's phrase for medical care in the field.
"There's food in the galley,"
he said.
"Protein bars and glucose supplements mostly. Help yourself."
"You're still eating like a soldier."
"I still do lots of things like a soldier.
Just not the most important things." She headed off, and he headed toward the cargo bay, sneaking up on the crates as if they were an easily startled animal. They were small, maybe a meter on the side, tiny in the otherwise empty hold. He didn't know what he had expected. Something bigger, he supposed. They seemed like a great deal of trouble for such small containers. He ran his hands over them and decided he did not want to see the spice after all. He headed back to the cockpit to pilot his ship. The hail from Orin was already blinking. He punched it.
"Go,"
he said.
"Our hackers have the film for the spaceport." I have seen your little incident.
Incident? I was shot twice.
Facial recognition on the apparent leader of the hit team gives an ID of Wrath Zizor. Apparently he's an elementary school teacher from the core.
I think we can safely assume that is fake. Who is he, Orin?
Free agent, we think. Probably works for the Hutts. They wouldn't want the Engspice to get to Coruscant. They're at odds with our buyer.
The Hutts. It seemed they were into everything. Is that all you have?
Zirid asked him.
That's all I have. How are you planning to get the Spice to Coruscant, Z-Man?
I'm not telling you a Criffin thing, Orin. You have a leak in your organization. I'll get it there. That's all you need to know.
Orin chuckled.
Goodbye, Z-Man.
Behind him, Aaron cleared her throat. Zirid could not bring himself to make eye contact with her. He started punching coordinates into the Navicomp, and Aaron eased into the co-pilot seat. It had been a long while since anyone had shared the cockpit with him. She had bandaged up her calf.
Bandage looks good, he said.
Thanks.
She eyed the math in the Navicomp.
That's not going to get us to Coruscant.
No, he said. It's going to take us to the Kravos system.
That's a dead system, she said. On the edge of Imperial space.
He nodded.
Supply convoys stopped there to skim the gas giants for hydrogen.
I don't understand. What's the plan to get to Coruscant?
I thought you had the plan, he said.
What?
He smiled.
I'm joking.
Not funny. The plan, Zirid.
He nodded.
It's dangerous.
Aaron seemed unbothered. She stared out the cockpit as they flew into the velvet of space, waiting for him to explain. He tried.
I'm gonna piggyback Fat Man on an Imperial ship.
What does that mean?
It means what it sounds like. I heard about it in flight school back in the service.
You heard about it?
Zirid continued as if she had said nothing.
Centuries ago, smugglers used to jump into and out of hyperspace milliseconds after a Republic ship, say a big supply ship heading for Coruscant. Smuggler comes out of hyperspace and goes cold except for thrusters.
Aaron considered it.
Hard to pick up on sensors.
Right. But only if you come out in the supply ship's shadow. And only if you come out and get cold right away.
You'd have to know right where they'd come out.
And they did then. And we do now.
Zirid knew all the details of every hyperspace lane in the core. If he knew where Imperial ships entered hyperspace and their ultimate destination, he knew where they would come out.
Then what?
Then you latch on.
Aaron's eyes looked as wide as a Rhodian's.
You latch on?
An electromagnetic seal. That part's easy to do.
They'll feel it.
Zirid nodded.
Gotta be a big enough ship, and you gotta latch onto a cargo bay or something similar. Something likely to be empty. Then, once you get through the atmosphere, you disengage the seal and float away into clear sky.
It sounded ridiculous when he spoke it aloud. He could not believe he was contemplating it. Aaron blew out a sigh, stared out the cockpit.
This is your plan?
Such as it is. You have something better?
Who's ever done it?
No one I know. When the Republic learned of it, they adjusted their sensor scans to look for it. No one's done it in centuries.
But the Empire won't know about it.
So I hope.
He tried hard not to see the doubt in her expression. It echoed his own.
This is all I've got, Aaron. It's this or nothing.
She stared out the cockpit, the turn of her thoughts visible behind the green veil of her eyes. Fat Man was almost clear of gravity wells.
I can still drop you somewhere, he said,
hoping she would not take him up on it.
You don't have to hitch a ride with me.
She smiled.
This is all I've got, too, Z-Man.
Aren't we a pair, then?
She chuckled, but it faded quickly.
Aaron, you all right?
I feel like I left Alderaan a lifetime ago,
she said.
It's been hours.
A lot can happen in a handful of hours, he said.
She nodded and drifted off.
Aaron?
She came back to him from wherever she'd been.
I'm with you,
she said.
And I think I can help make this work.
Chapter 8
Vrath turned Razor's Navicomp loose, and it generated a course to Coruscant. Even if Zerid jumped into hyperspace right away, which Vrath doubted, Vrath's modified Imperial dropship would still beat Fat Man to Coruscant. His work required much travel. Razor had the best hyperdrive credits could buy. When the Navicomp had finished its calculations, he engaged the hyperdrive, and the ship blazed through hyperspace. He dimmed the cockpit and watched a bulkhead-mounted chrono tick away the seconds, the minutes. After a short time, he disengaged the hyperdrive, and the black of normal space replaced the cerulean churn of hyperspace. In the distance, Dayside Coruscant gleamed against the black of space. The planet, entirely coated in duracrete and metal, always reminded Vrath of a giant cog, the mainspring of the Republic. He wondered what would befall the Republic now that the spring had been fouled. For a moment, he turned nostalgic for his time in the Imperial Army, when he had turned Republic soldiers into ragdolls at over 300 meters. He'd had 53 confirmed kills before getting thrown out of the service, and regretted not one. He'd hated everything about the service, except for the killing, and how he felt after winning a battle. He imagined how it must feel for Imperial forces to walk as conquerors on Coruscant's surface, for the Navy to own the space around the jewel of the Republic. Even from a distance, Vrath could see the silver arrows of two Imperial cruisers patrolling the black around Coruscant. A third orbited a moon. Ordinarily, a flotilla of satellites whirled around the planet, too, but Vrath saw none. Perhaps the Empire had destroyed them as part of its forced communications blackout of the planet. Two of the dozen or so fighters escorting the nearest cruiser, the new Mark VII advanced interceptors, peeled off and sped toward Vrath's ship. He made sure his weapon systems were powered down and put his communications gear on open hail. Almost before he lifted his hand from the control panel, the Navy pinged him.
Unidentified vessel,
said a stern voice that sounded like every Imperial communications officer he'd heard during all his time in the Corps.
You are in restricted space. Power down your engines and deflectors completely, and prepare to be towed. Any deviation from that instruction will result in your immediate destruction.
Vrath did not doubt it.
Message received. We'll comply.
He powered down his engines and deactivated his deflectors.
I need to speak to the OIC. I have information of interest to the Empire.
The fighters buzzed his dropship. One of them swooped around and under Razor. As it pulled out in front of him, it activated an electromagnetic tow. A glowing blue line formed between the two ships, and the Mark VII started pulling him through space. The other fighter maintained position behind Razor, so he could blow Vrath from space should it prove necessary. Ahead, the tunnel of the cruiser's landing bay loomed. The fighter pulled Vrath through the throat of the cruiser's landing bay until they reached an isolated landing pad where two dozen troopers in full gray battle armor awaited him, along with a tall, red-headed naval officer. He nodded at them through the canopy, unstrapped from the chair, disarmed himself of both his blaster and his knives, and headed out. By the time Razor's landing ramp clanged off the metal deck of the cruiser, he was staring at the dead eyes of 14 TH-17 blaster rifles.
Secure him,
the naval officer said. Two of the armored troopers shouldered their weapons and rushed him. He did not resist as one put flex binders on his wrists and the other patted him down.
He is unarmed,
the one said, his voice the modulated mechanical sound of the helmet speaker. Search the ship, the naval officer said. I want to see his flight records.
Yes, sir,
responded the troopers, and seven of them boarded the ship to search.
There's nothing of interest aboard,
Brath said.
I came from Volta. That's as far back as the records go.
The naval officer smiled, a tight, false gesture, and walked up to Vrath. His unwrinkled uniform smelled freshly cleaned. The freckles on his pale face looked like a pox. Vrath could have killed him with a high kick to the trachea, but he thought it unwise.
I'm Commander Jard, first officer of the Imperial Cruiser Valor. You are under arrest for flying in restricted space. Whether your punishment is execution or mere imprisonment is entirely at my discretion, and depends upon how satisfied I am with the answers you provide to my questions.
I understand.
What is your name? Where did you come from?
He barely remembered the name his mother had given him. He offered the one his profession had most recently given him.
Vrath Zizor. As I said, I flew here directly from Volta.
What brought you here, Vrath Zizor?
I have information of interest to the OIC.
The naval officer cocked his head.
Are you military, Vrath Zizor?
Former. Special detachment from the 403rd. Company E.
An Imperial sniper.
Vrath was impressed that Jard knew his unit designation. He nodded.
Well, Vrath Zizor of the 403rd, you may tell me your information.
I would prefer to speak directly to the captain.
Darth Malgus will not.
Darth? The commander is a Sith?
Jard looked hard at Vrath.
He will want to hear what I have to say,
Vrath said.
It concerns the Jedi.
Jard studied his face.
Put him in the brig, he said to another soldier standing behind Vrath. If Darth Malgus wishes to speak to you, he will do so. If he does not, then he does not.
You're making a mistake.
Shut up,
one of the troopers said, and cuffed him in the back of the head. Three troopers escorted Vrath out of the landing bay and into a nearby lift. Vrath did not resist. It had been years since he'd been aboard an Imperial ship, and they remained exactly as he remembered. Antiseptic, purely functional killing machines. Just like him.
This one was a sniper detached from the 403rd,
said one of the troopers to another.
Or so he says. That true?
Said another.
I heard things about that unit.
Vrath said nothing, merely stared into the tinted slit of the trooper's helmet visor.
Some kind of Superman is what I heard.
The trooper holding his shoulder gave him a shake.
This one don't look like much.
Vrath only smiled. He didn't look like much, deliberately so. The soldiers trekked him deeper into the bowels of the ship. The corridors narrowed, and blue uniformed security personnel started to appear at doors that answered only to certain key codes. Vrath had been in Imperial brigs many times, usually for insubordination. Before they reached the bridge, one of the troopers, the one with a sergeant's symbol on his shoulder plate, held up a hand for the others to stop. He cocked his head to the side as he listened to something over his helmet speaker. He glanced at Vrath as he listened.
Confirmed,
he said to whoever he was speaking. Then, to his men.
Darth Malgus wants him on the bridge.
The three men shared a look and reversed course.
Lucky you, 403rd,
said the trooper holding him. Exploding into motion, Vrath drove a kick into the chest plate of the trooper in front of him, sending him flying into the sergeant and knocking both of them hard against the wall. Then he spun behind the third while slipping his bound arms over the trooper's head. He maneuvered the binders under the neck ring of the helmet and squeezed. Not enough to kill, just enough to make a point.
The man's gag sounded loud in his helmet. His fingers clawed at Vrath's arms.
He was probably starting to see spots. Vrath released him and shoved him away. The entire exchange had taken perhaps 4 seconds. The two men he'd knocked against the wall had their rifles aimed at his head. Vrath held out his arms for them to take.
Don't look like much,